Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're going to be talking about strip tillage on the show. We get so many questions about strip till, and I know if you ever catch the Ag PhD TV show, undoubtedly you're going to see a strip till rig running through on some of our ground at one point or another. And there are so many questions about it because there's different purposes that many farmers are trying to achieve by doing strip tillage on their farm. So we'll talk about that and answer your questions today. You can always give us a call at 844-44-AG-PHD during the show. We'll put you on and talk it through with you, or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. All right, I've been pretty excited about the strip tillage. I like reduced till. I realize there are some advantages to no-till. There are some advantages to conventional till. And there are some advantages to some of the practices somewhere in between, like strip tillage. So we're not saying one is the only way to go or anything like that. I know we generally, Brian, get negative feedback from no-tillers saying, why are you guys tilling? Why are you guys doing that? But the conventional till guys seem to be okay if we do strip till.
Well, yeah, I mean, I kind of look at it like this. Conventional till is just kind of what you did. There are a lot of people and what you've done over the years. With no-till, it's almost like a change of mindset. And so now all of a sudden that becomes super important to you and you're passionate about it. Yeah, we don't find a lot of people that are unbelievably passionate about tillage. But anyway, with strip till, I guess the big thing, and to Darren's point, we don't have, well, you can be successful in any tillage system that you're in. So I don't really care if you're in no-till, strip-till, conventional till. We just would stress to you, look, if you're switching what you're doing, it's a big change. It's not just that tillage thing. Now you have to change everything from your herbicide program to your insecticide program, what hybrids you're going to pick, possibly row spacing. You have to look at different things. So, for example, if your soil is colder, now you got to look more at the cold germ score on a hybrid or on a soybean variety. You might want to do more with seed treatments. I mean, there are just a lot of things that change. It affects pretty much everything else in your operation when you make a change. But I'll just step back a little bit, and I'll give you our story real quick. So we were always conventional till. Our dad was originally from north central Iowa, where they mowboard plowed, they dissed, they field cultivated twice, and so everything had four tillage passes, plus then cultivation once or twice in crop. So that's what he was used to, and he basically brought a lot of that to South Dakota. Well, back in the early 1990s, the NRCS was getting on people about, hey, you got hilly ground, you need to have a certain amount of residue out there. So we looked at that and we said, all right, well, we'll switch some acres to no-till. Let's just give it a shot. We have good enough herbicides now and good enough equipment now that we can actually make no-till work. You know, keep in mind, our grandpas used to, they may have wanted to go no-till, but they couldn't do it. We didn't have herbicides and we didn't have good enough tillage. With a planter. So you couldn't go out there with a planter and do your full tillage with a planter. You couldn't get a good enough seed bed. So anyway, we were no-till on about half our acres for about 10 years, and our two problems were, number one, the soil was too cold, so we had poor corn stands, and number two, we had nutrient stratification, where basically all our fertility was in the top couple inches after 10 years on the non-mobile soil nutrients like phosphorus, potassium, zinc, copper, and so on. So we said, okay, well, what are we going to do here? And that's where we started trying strip till, and we really liked it because that solved our two issues. We were still able to leave most residue on the soil surface. We were still able to reduce the erosion pretty well, not as good as no-till, but pretty well. But we found that our seabed was about 7 degrees warmer versus the no-till, and then we were able to place nutrients down 6 inches, 8 inches, even as much as 10 inches deep. And so for us, that was a big gain because when we're in dry conditions, like where we farm, we only get on average 22, maybe 24 inches of total annual precipitation per year. That includes the snow. So you think about it, we don't have a lot of moisture. Well, when your top couple inches is drying out all the time, that means you're not going to get those nutrients into the plant because there's no moisture there. So we wanted to get our nutrients down where our moisture was, and it made a lot of sense for us. It's worked quite well. But again, that's not saying we can't make no-till work or can't make conventional till work. It's just for us, it was a pretty good fit on a bunch of our acres to go strip till.
You know, one of the things that we had to figure out is residue management. When you go from conventional till or you go from no-till into strip tillage, it does change the game just a little bit there too. Like you mentioned, it changes everything that you're doing. And one of the difference makers that we found was a chopping corn head, just getting that residue sized so we were able to work with it a little more. And then the other part of that is, all right, when you're running a chopping corn head, do you run it to the ground or do you leave the stalks up a little bit or do you leave the stalks up a lot? And we've kind of found that maybe 18 inches is a nice stalk length where we can still control the wind a little bit and keep a lot of the leaves and things in the field, but yet not have a big mess to deal with.
Yeah, for us in both no-till and strip-till, we had a lot of problems before we switched to a chopping corn head because those stalks were still going to be there in the spring, not sliced up, and we hairpinned a lot of residue. We had poor corn stands, and Darren in particular was on me about this a lot, like, hey, our stands are terrible, and they go, well, I don't know, it's not that bad, we can live with it, whatever. And then we finally tried a chopping corn head, and it's like, oh, okay, now I get it. So Darren was happier, still wasn't fully happy. You know, we had a few more changes we had to make to the planter and everything else. But, yeah, that was a game.
Well, we're getting there. We aren't perfect yet either. And this is one of the things that, like you mentioned to start this show off here, Brandon, I think this is a great place to start from when we discuss strip-till. As you make that change, you're going to be changing a lot more than what you expect. And all of a sudden, yeah, you're dealing with more residue up there than you were with the conventional till. And now, well, when do I do those strips? And how do I deal with them in the spring? Do I need to refresh the strips? Do I need to push residue out of the way? Those are all things that you'll learn along the way as you get going with strip-till. It all depends on where you're at and a lot of things. For us, we know that ground's going to be frozen for a good 6 months or more, so that solves a lot of the issues that could come up. But if you're in a situation where your ground doesn't freeze, that's just a little different management that you've got to do. So we're going to talk through strip tillage today. We'll also, again, take your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD as well. We'll be right back.
Each year brings new and unique challenges to farming, and your operation needs to constantly adapt to meet them. That's why at AgBiome, we're working every day to bring you new and better solutions. Microbial-based solutions that protect your crop and help it reach its full potential. To learn more about how we're doing it, visit agbiome.com. That's AGBIOME.com. AgBiome, feeding the world responsibly. Partnering with microbes for human benefit.
A history of success means proven performance, but let's call performance what it is. Profitability. And boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support, let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Your soybeans are in the bin, but the game isn't over yet. Score more points this year by taking your beans to the end zone. If your beans went in the bin at low moisture, you can naturally rehydrate to reclaim lost yield with the End Zone Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. At $10 beans, every point of moisture below your target takes away 15 cents per bushel. That means raising 9% moisture beans to 13 can increase your profits by 60 cents per bushel. Score more yields in the end zone from Farm Shop MFG.
Thanks for joining us today on Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty. We're talking about strip tillage on the show. And this is something that, as we mentioned to start the show off, it's a little different. We didn't have the equipment to do this years back. I know talking with at least one of my grandparents is all into conventional tillage. The other one had to do conventional tillage and really wanted to do less. And I remember when he saw us start to do strip tillage on our farm, and he's like, oh, I wish I had this equipment back when I was farming. And he just talked about erosion control was probably his number one thing that said, oh, I could have done so much better job and the land would have been in so much better shape by the time it got to your generation. I know that was his take on things, but certainly there are lots of other benefits or potential benefits of strip tillage. We've got Dave Sender with us right now with Environmental Tillage Systems, the Soil Warrior guys. Dave, thanks for joining us. All right, so we're talking strip tillage today, and certainly you've got a lot of experience in this field. And Brian had made the comment to start the show. He goes, if somebody asks me about, hey, I want to get into strip tillage, I just tell them, okay, we got a lot of things to talk through here between residue, fertility, erosion, all these things. Where do you start with new customers when they're getting into strip tillage?
Sure. And the segue that you brought up with your grandfather was a great story, because it really touches on that's where typically we start out with when we're talking with new customers that maybe are coming from conventional or even no-till, looking at strip till and what are the things that they need to do to assess, if you will. And like you said, there's a ton of things. We could probably talk for 2 hours straight about all the things to really take into consideration. But as they say, you got to start somewhere. So typically, and again, it depends on where the customer's at, especially this day and age with technology, and you start talking about guidance and things of that nature. You know, I've talked to guys that have, a lot of those guys already have that technology, but on the same token, there's some guys that don't have that technology. So, you know, that kind of dictates a little bit on where you start. But, you know, if they don't have that technology, you know, that's where you start. And you kind of say, well, these are some of the things you need to look at from a guidance standpoint. Is RTK great? Absolutely. But not everybody's going to want to spend that much money right off the bat. So it's not the end of the world if you go with say a little bit lesser signal than RTK. So those are some things to take into consideration.
You got the RTK guidance, which I believe is really essential for what we're doing and to get the absolute most out of your strip till. I think that's essential, but again, you can go with a much lower level of guidance if you say, I got to just step my way into this thing. How about this? Here's another common question we get. Well, I want to buy an 8-row strip tiller and I've got a 16-row planter. Is that going to work?
Yeah.
Or can I use a 12-row strip tiller and a 16-row planter?
Yeah, you bet. So there again, you know, talking about some of the technology, and that's one of the beautiful things, especially when you talk RTK. And if you marry together RTK with active implement guidance where we can steer our machines, you can match up that 8 to a 16 or 12 to a 16 or 8 to a 24. I mean, you name it, and you can match that up with that RTK correction. And have that pass to pass repeatability, and that takes part of the price tag too. Say that sticker shock out of the equation as well when somebody is getting into strip till. That is one of the beautiful things about the technology in this day and age, is you don't have to be so rigid, so to speak, with having, say, if I'm running a 12-row planter, I gotta have a 12-row strip till machine. That's really not the case anymore with all the advancements they've made in guidance technology. So that's been a great thing to see over the years.
My brother loves to do strip till in the fall, and we've got soil that freezes, and it just handles so much different in the spring when it thaws out versus, I know in some parts of the country where the ground doesn't freeze or doesn't freeze hard, guys say, man, they've really loved doing it in the spring. What's your preference, Dave? And if you're doing it in fall versus spring, is there a big change that you'd make in terms of how you set that strip tiller up?
Yeah, I guess if I'm running in the spring, I'm definitely not going to be as aggressive. As you said, that soil's a lot more mellow or soft, however you want to phrase that, than it is in the fall. So I guess I'd just be not as aggressive, and especially since you don't have that freeze-thaw cycle to, you know, if you've got any type of clumping that you potentially could get in the fall, you know, you want to be a little more cognizant of how you're setting that machine and, for lack of better terms, kind of say tippy-toe through that. So because a lot of times in the spring you're going to be going out there just maybe a day, a few days ahead of time before you plant. So just not as, I guess that to sum it up, I'd say not as aggressive. I just wouldn't be as aggressive with how I set my machine up. In the fall, typically folks are going to be going as deep as they can get it, and in the spring you need to be a lot more cognizant of that. Also looking at the weather forecast, if I'm if it's going to be dry, if it's going to be windy, et cetera, et cetera, you want to make sure you maintain a decent level of moisture in that strip for when you come back and plant.
I know with speaking specifically about your Soil Warrior machine, you've made some changes to make things even more heavy duty, if that was even possible. What are some of the advancements that you're making? What are some of the things as you're learning that are really making a difference for farmers?
Oh, I guess there's a lot of things we're working on. There's probably certain things I can't talk about with some of the advancements we're working on now, but just to really be somewhat vague about it, but utilizing more of that technology when it comes to the ability to control the machine, is that I don't want to get into too much detail, but definitely leaning more and more on technology to kind of keep going down that precision side of things when it comes to really every aspect of strip till.
Yeah, I think from the fertility side, I know for our farm, I can sure speak to that we're really dialing up very specific maps about how we're laying out fertility and these types of things and seeding rates to take advantage of everything. And it's been nice. I was just out with a couple of two of my youngest kids this weekend, and we were doing some strip tilling and just showing them, okay, here's what we're looking at in the soil. We're trying to build up a berm. And so they had a lot of questions about that. Like, okay, so how do you know, and I'll throw this at you, Dave, how do you know how big a berm that you want to build in the fall? Because we know it is going to settle a little bit by spring.
Absolutely. And that's a great, great point to bring up. A part of that's going to be when you're making the berm. There again, spring versus fall. And that's kind of one of the things I talk, when I talk about being aggressive with the machine. You know, in the fall, typically you're going to build that berm up a little bit higher with the anticipation and expectation that that berm is going to settle out some. The other side of that is the way that berm is going to look height-wise specifically is a lot of it's going to be driven by whether it's a shank versus a coulter. With the shank unit, you're typically going to see a higher berm, and that's because you're say lifting that soil and creating more air space because you've got some bigger chunks that don't quite fall back together right away, versus a coulter machine where those chunks are going to be quite a bit smaller, so they fit back in. But over winter, those strips will settle back down. So typically with a shank machine, you're going to want to see that berm is probably 4, 5, 6, 7 inches tall, versus a coulter machine, that berm is probably typically going to be anywhere from, say, 2 to 4 inches tall in the fall. And at the end result of that is when you come to the following spring, that berm is typically going to be a couple inches above your untilled surface.
Yep, that's a great comparison there between the coulter and the shank and just how much airspace there's going to be under the soil and how much it's going to kind of fill back in over the winter. Talking with Dave Sender here with Environmental Tillage Systems, the Soil Warrior guys. Dave, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on today. Thanks for all the info.
You bet. Have a great day.
You as well. We're talking about strip tillage on the show today. How can I not have a great day when we're talking about that? And really, any agronomic discussion you want to get into, our phone lines are open throughout the show today at 844-44-AG-PHD. We're going to get into the AG-PHD mailbag later in the show. If you have a question for us for our mailbag, you can send that in as well, radio@agphd.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The Pentair Hypro Express Flush Valve reduces plugged nozzles and improves cleanout of your spray boom. Simply flush boom sections with a quarter-turn ball valve and leave your tools in the cab. Plus, installation is easy. Simply remove the existing end cap plug and replace with the Hypro Express Flush Valve. Learn more at Pentair.com/Hypro.
Your soybeans are in the bin, but the game isn't over yet. Score more points this year by taking your beans to the end zone. At $10 beans, every point of moisture below your target takes away 15 cents per bushel. Reclaim that lost yield with the end zone bin system from Farm Shop MFG.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
I need the solve without the sell.
With NK Seeds, I get people I trust who show me where their hybrids and varieties fit in my field without the heavy sell.
So I get solutions that solve my problems from a partner who knows that success matters.
Find your solve at nkseeds.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor Herbicide Brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Get tough on herbicide-resistant weeds. Add Tough 5-EC into your post-emergence tank mix and increase control of some of the toughest-to-kill herbicide-resistant weeds that plague corn, such as Palmer amaranth and water hemp. Tough 5-EC is a selective contact herbicide with an underutilized mode of action that provides faster kill and application flexibility for post-emergence control of key broadleaf weeds. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5-EC or visit BelchamUSA.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Fill once, plant all day. The Thrive 3D application system from FMC is a revolutionary in-furrow crop protection platform that plants up to 480 acres between refills. The Thrive 3D application system mounts to most major planter brands and can be yours at no cost with the FMC Freedom Pass program. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're talking about strip tillage. One of the things at the top of the hour that we were discussing was how it totally changes the options that you have in your fertility program. And it was actually really exciting for Brian and me when we started having the ability to add the fertility in with that strip as we were going. We've got our friend Tim Duker down with us right now with AgriLiquid. Tim, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Darren. How are you doing today?
Doing well. Doing well. All right. We're talking about strip tillage, and I know there are different options for fertility in conventional till, in no-till, and certainly strip till, I think, is the best one because for fertility options, I'm not saying it's the best tillage system for everyone. I'm saying for fertility options because now, in addition to everything we can do with the planter, everything you could possibly broadcast out there, you can also do some deep banding. I like that. Do you find a lot of the growers you're working with, Tim, that do strip till doing some deeper banding?
Well, I totally agree. I think that strip till does give you the many options and some really good options for increasing fertility levels on your farm. We do see that deep banding. Of course, we would like maybe more liquid fertilizer going on in some cases, but there are lots of rigs out there putting dry fertilizer on in deep bands. It's a very good option, a really, really good way to raise potassium levels. That's the one thing I really like doing in the fall and getting that extra potassium right underneath that root system. And whenever we can make our strips and put in a couple of different zones of nutrients for our root systems to grow into, that's when we always see big benefits, whether that is liquid or dry down in the, you know, more of the bottom of that band that we're putting in, a trench that we're building, then some extra nutrients going on with the planter. So you got a couple different zones for that root system to grow in. We always see good results with multiple zones.
You know, this year was a great example of exactly what you're talking about, Tim. We got really dry, and you could see it when the plants had to send roots down deeper, and they found fertility as they were looking for that moisture. And we think about roots going down for moisture, but what they're going for is they need the moisture to draw in the nutrients as well. So if you don't have any nutrients down there, you suffer even more from drought stress.
Exactly. Just like you were saying, that, you know, we can do lots of things with a planter, putting things in a horizontal band, basically, you know, just a little above, just a little below the seed level. But with strip till, putting those nutrients down at, say, 8-9 inches in quite a few cases, then when those roots do go down and look for moisture, they still are able to pull in those nutrients, and those nutrients are able to get into that solution that is able to be taken up by the root system.
When we think about that, you're putting that fertility down deep. So you're not saying go away from everything with the planter. You'd still be utilizing your options with the planter too in this system?
Certainly. In the upper Midwest area, in our cool climates, when we're planting our corn, typically those soils are cool. We definitely need phosphorus when in the infurrow when we're planting. We need phosphorus availability to that seed as it's germinating and help get that root system developed and growing quickly for that plant. So it's very, very important to certainly have phosphorus, but I like some micronutrients there. And it's also a place to think about micronutrients in that deep band so that we still have that availability even during, like you're saying, in those drought years where the plant's down deeper looking for nutrients and water.
You know, other than boron, which can be leachable, a lot of the other micros really stay where they're put. So I can see if you built a band up down, say, 6 inches or something with your strip till, it's probably going to stay there quite a while.
It certainly will. You know, unless you're coming through and doing some kind of other tillage that could be mixing that up. With strip till, the one thing that I've found, and some of this is because we're on irrigated ground with subsurface irrigation, so we'll run the strips in the same location year after year. And then you're always building up that zone that you're using, and not necessarily having to build up the whole field, but that strip zone keeps in the same spot year after year, and you're building the soil where that system is always going to be.
Well, you know, we get a lot of non-farmers that watch our show or listen to our program, and that's one of the things that they say. I can see farmers are trying to increase efficiency with this. So you've been doing this and looking at it for a long time. Do you change your fertility rec then versus the guy that's broadcasting?
Slightly. We can lower our fertility recommendations a little bit because we're banning fertilizer. It is put in a more efficient location for uptake. With the strip till going through and creating a nice soil profile, your main source of root uptake is going to be in that zone of tillage that you're creating. So your fertilizer you're going to use and nutrient uptake is coming from that particular zone. So if you think that you're working about a third of the field of tillage in a strip till situation on 30-inch row spacing, that other two-thirds, you don't necessarily have to apply the nutrients to, as long as you keep enough nutrients for the yields that you're producing in that area of the strip.
Yeah, that's a good point. It doesn't mean, hey, I have to fertilize for 50 bushel corn now and I expect to get 150. No, but as long as you're putting out what you need for 150 or 200 or whatever your yield goal is, putting it in that band where the root system is more likely to come in contact with it is great. Now, how about soybeans, Tim? And this is the one that I thought on our farm when we changed to strip till, I thought soybeans got the biggest boost because they just don't have that big a root system. It seems to make sense that having the nutrients fairly close is a good idea for soybeans.
I have not done a lot with soybeans, but what we have done is you can definitely see an advantage. Typically, it seems like soybeans don't have too much of a problem with compaction, but you put them in a nice strip till zone and they just seem to flourish. Having that root system that can go down unobstructed with that tillage, because you're not driving over it ever in a strip tillage situation. You've created that zone of tillage, and then you stay off of it throughout the entire year. So those roots, they just seem to flourish. And having, again, some fertilizer down below that they can uptake, I think, again, is beneficial, just like it is in corn.
Now, we talked about phosphorus, we talked about potassium, we talked about some of these micronutrients. How about nitrogen and sulfur? What do you do with nitrogen and sulfur management for your guys that are raising corn in a strip-till system?
Oh, again, it's going to depend on your year a little bit and your climate, where you're located, your soil types. We do not run any nitrogen in the fall in our strips in Michigan. It's too risky. We have too much moisture throughout the wintertime that we have too much loss potential from putting nitrogen on in the fall. Many other locations can do that because of either less rainfall that they're getting or less moisture or different ground conditions. But I love nitrogen in the bottom of the strip. Again, I think it's a thing where our roots are going down and able to take it up as they're also taking up moisture. So again, if you're down at that 6, 8, 9 inches, a band of nitrogen down there seems to be really beneficial. And the root system is getting down to it as the plant needs it. So I think it's a very good place to put it. If you're in a high moisture area, sometimes you could have a risk of leaching potential. Could happen there. And again, depends on the soil types also. But one thing, almost everything that we see needs sulfur. Put sulfur if you're going to put nitrogen down, or even just sulfur with potash or whatever your potassium source is. Make sure you're getting that sulfur in that strip if you need it.
Yeah, sulfur is probably the most underapplied nutrient that I run into as well, Tim. I appreciate you making the comment on that. We're talking with Tim Dukert here with AgroLiquid. Tim, thank you so much. Really appreciate all the research work you're doing. Thanks for sharing some of that with us right now.
Thanks for having me on, Darren.
You bet. Talking about strip tillage on our show today, and we're kind of hitting that fertility piece. I do believe that was a big game changer for us and our farm, and I think it helped us tremendously with our drought tolerance, where we've got strip till ground, and we've got that fertility placed deep right underneath where that seed's going to be growing. Oh man, it's been awesome. And you can just see it when you reach that with your roots, you reach that fertility, the growth is just tremendous. We'll talk more about strip tillage and some of the pros and cons with strip till coming up after this. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
Did you know soybean diseases like white mold and sudden death syndrome can survive in your soil even after rotating crops? Prevention of these diseases is a constant battle, and yield loss from an infection can be devastating. The right management plan makes all the difference. Keep your beans safe next spring with Heads Up Seed Treatment. Heads Up guards your seed treatment from both white mold and SDS. Stay protected and profitable by asking to have your seed pre-treated with Heads Up. Learn more at headsupst.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor Herbicide Brands. Always read and follow label directions.
We now bring you an important news bulletin.
This just in from Live Action News.
Innovation has come to the world of burndown.
New Elevor herbicide controls your toughest weeds, even glyphosate and ALS-resistant weeds like mare's tail and henbit. Talk with your retailer about Elevor herbicide today and ask how you can start elevating your burn down.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
The next big thing is here.
From the system that brought you Roundup Ready to Extend technology comes a soybean like no other. Introducing Extend Flex soybeans. Elite genetics, now with the addition of glufosinate tolerance. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. No dicamba may be used in crop with ExtendFlex soybeans unless and until approved, and no dicamba formulations are currently registered for such use in the 2021 season.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop, and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Talking strip till on today's Ag PhD radio show. Hope you're enjoying it so far. If you have an agronomic question, we'd love to tackle it as we're going. You don't have to wait till the end of the show. You can call us at 844-44-AG-PHD. Real happy to have Chris Lurson on with us right now with Case IH because we talked about fertility. We talked about kind of the overall picture of strip till, but I really want to get into some of the equipment that's needed to get this done. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me today, Darren. Appreciate it.
All right, so as you get started into a strip-till system, if you're a farmer thinking about converting into strip-till, what are some of the things that you need to know in terms of the equipment requirements to get it done?
Right, that's a very good question. As I farm up in Northeast Iowa as well, and have actually within the last 3 or 4 years converted into doing strip-till myself. So, some of the things that obviously is the bar itself, and choosing what product you're going to apply, because there's so many different applications, whether you're going to use a dry product or, and I'm sure you've gone through that through the fertility part here, it sounds like, already, but anhydrous and even just strip tilling without applying a product and just doing the tillage and taking the conservation aspect of it and bringing that in. But some of the things that I've kind of learned just from our time using it is it's been a fantastic system, but it's not always everything. Probably keeping around some of the equipment that you used before is still needed, field cultivators or discs or those types of things for some rescue operations or those types of things is one of the kind of the things we've learned. And certainly the handling, and even some of the neighbors have I found have watched and tagging along and teaming up with them to help kind of improve the overall efficiencies with them have been helpful.
Coming out of 2018 and 2019, one of the concerns in our farm was compaction management. If you've got compaction issues, can you address that with strip-till?
The thing about compaction that we have found over digging holes and being in fields, for the better part of 20, 30 years now, and learning more about it, is that typically the compaction layer that is going to hinder root development, and we can dig holes and see it very, very vividly and apparent, is somewhere in that 8 to 9 inches deep to the bottom of it. Some extreme cases, 10 or 11. And from most strip till systems with shanks, from either the NutriTiller system, you're going 6, 7 inches deep. And if you're really trying to get it, you might go a little deeper, but normally you're going with a larger bar, and horsepower can be a problem, and you end up wearing components out faster, and you might be just right in the top of the compaction layer. So it really can help address it from maybe just the scratching literally of the surface of it, but getting under it, removing it, from our standpoint, is more of a job of some sort of rip application to remove it.
All right. How about horsepower, Chris? Now, you mentioned depending on what you're doing and how deep you're going, that may change a little bit. But what do you normally recommend for that?
Well, you're going to see somewhere probably in the neighborhood, of 16-row bar, for example, is going to be somewhere in that 400 horsepower range for a shank machine. You might be able to get a little smaller tractor depending on topography. You know, if you're very flat, you can get away with a little bit less than that. But, you know, rolling like myself here in Northeast Iowa, probably going to need a little bit more in order to pull yourself up those hills and, you know, kind of get the action of creating that berm, creating a good soil tilth and against eventually that berm.
You know, when you look at the residue management piece, this is a big one because I know as we reduce tillage to get into strip till from our conventional till part of our farm, that was something mm-hmm. we were nervous about because we like to do some corn on corn here and there when the market opportunity is there. And we got a lot of residue out there. What do you advise for growers when their concern is, can I manage all this residue?
Yeah, so I think some have gone in a couple different directions here. I've seen and utilized, you know, residue managers on a strip till machine to at least push that residue out of the way and be able to engage the bare soil and create the berm that way. And it works. I can't say that I've seen it in, you know, replicated year over year over year over year of corn on corn. But, you know, that's one option. The other is probably some sort of shallow, fast, you know, vertical tillage type application that isn't a huge disturber of the soil itself, but is able to engage the soil fractionally to begin the breakdown and help get it available to actually move out of the way. That's, you know, a little bit more than most probably strip tillers will want to do, but it is an option. In that case, where we're doing repetitive corn on corn. But for their options.
We like to use the chopping corn head just to size up that residue going into this. Is that something you would recommend? What's been your experience on your farm?
I think that can be a good option. Although we're pretty well 50-50 rotation here for me anyway, not necessarily everybody in the area, of course, but you know, chopping corn head, we just use a pinching stalk roll, 3408 Case IH corn head in that case, and you know, the residue is really, really nice for us. But certainly the chopping corn head is an option to be able to make it more manageable and actually get it to be able to do something with it versus maybe having longer pieces of stock to deal with.
Now, judging by where your farm's at, Chris, Northeast mm-hmm. Iowa, I'm thinking you're probably a fall strip till guy. What do you see for a trend in your region? Do you see a lot of fall stuff? Do you see some spring stuff? What do you like there?
Well, we are predominantly here actually in the spring. There's a couple of us in this area that do it in the spring, even with shanks.
Really?
Mainly.
Okay.
Yeah. It's surprising, I suppose, for some. This year's a great year if you're going to do fall fertilizer.
Absolutely.
So early and getting done, right?
Well, I get it. Last year, that was your only shot. This year, you at least have the option of fall or spring.
Yeah. So we may do some yet, I think. It really comes down to soil sampling, and I'm sure that came into your fertility discussion.
Yep.
But, man, we just got our sampling done, so we're kind of waiting on some results, trying to figure out what we're going to do yet, Darren. And I think that's really an important part to, as we got into strip till, is you got to know where you're at as far as your fertility and figure out where you're going to go. But for us, we did it in the spring and have been quite successful, I feel. You know, I guess beauty's in the eye of the beholder, but I do think that it worked well. But, you know, fall is another option, and certainly for this year is a good time to do it with the timing we have.
Yeah, we lucked out this year, and we got enough time in the fall that we could get it done. But I know this one thing really bothered my dad when we switched to strip tillage.
Mm-hmm.
He did not like seeing those stalks poking up through our soybean fields. And I know you said you're at a rotation. What's been the toughest thing in the change for you and your operation?
You know, I think it's just my brother and I, and, you know, dad is gone. But, you know, the toughest thing is just, I guess when we were going to the springtime, having the faith that we can get it done, you know, and trying to keep around the equipment, I think, that we still need. Like, in fact, I'm sitting in a tractor hooked to a ripper right now, I'll be perfectly honest, but I need to fix fields and things that are rough.
Yep.
I know
what you mean. We had to do some of that too.
Yeah. So, you know, those types of things has been just the toughest, just learning different ways of doing it. I love it, and we're going to continue to do it. And I think it's been a good practice, at least For a farm of our size, of that, 1,000 to 2,000 acres.
Yeah, the other thing has been manure management on our farm. We know that we're going to get some manure from neighboring dairy, and it's just a matter of, okay, which field is it going to be this year? How are we going to rotate things around, and then which ones are we going to strip till? So we've got kind of a little rotation going there, too, as to how we're going to handle
all
that.
Are you sure you're not on our farm? Because that's exactly what we do. We have a manure a dairy right next to us as well that we take a couple hundred acres, and trying to figure that out and figure that into the plan has been a bit of a challenge.
I don't know. It's just another asset, and you just got to figure out how to use it the best way. And that's really what strip till has become for our farm and for so many others. We're talking with Chris Lurson here with Case IH. Chris, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
Yeah, thank you, Darren. And be safe, everyone out there. And happy early Veterans Day to all those veterans out there.
You bet. Thanks a lot, Chris. Good for mentioning that. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
We now bring you an important news bulletin.
This just in from Live Action News.
Innovation has come to the world of burndown.
New Elevore herbicide controls your toughest weeds, even glyphosate and ALS-resistant weeds like mare's tail and henbit. Talk with your retailer about Elevore herbicide today and ask how you can start elevating your burndown.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
Revitech fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
When it comes to innovative herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. They've been bringing growers trusted brands like Panther, Credit Extreme, and Cheetah for decades, made right here in the USA. What's your favorite Nufarm brand? Email it to turnuptheburn@nufarm.com and you'll be entered to win a monthly $1,000 product giveaway. In these challenging times, we know you're under pressure. Nufarm's here to help.
It's about time. Applied at Planting, new Xyway 3D fungicide from FMC delivers foliar disease protection from planting to harvest. Active ingredient flutriafol moves from the soil through the corn as it grows for inside-out protection from roots to tassel. For season-long protection, choose first-of-its-kind Infurrow Xyway 3D fungicide. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Come on in. The Ag PhD mailbag is about to begin.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We have reached the Ag PhD mailbag portion of our show. We've got a number of questions that have been coming in. Brian, I wanted to start off, though. I had a couple questions come in just as a text here from some folks that I know about strip till. So I'm going to throw them at you. Are you ready for a couple strip till ones quick?
Yep.
All right, first of all, soil sampling. How do you guys do your soil sampling in a strip-till situation?
Random. That's how the soils labs have said to do it. So you just do it random. You don't worry about if you're in the strip or you're not. Now, when we first started doing strip-till, this is going back probably, I don't know, 16, 17, 18 years ago, I was concerned about the very same thing. And so what we did is we did tests both in the strip and in between the strips. And what we found is the crop removal charts are fairly accurate. So, for example, you can download the free AgPHD fertilizer removal app, and you can plug in whatever your crop is and your yield, and it will tell you how many nutrients the crop's going to remove. Well, basically, if we followed that chart, we found that our soil test results were the same in the row as outside the row. Didn't matter. Now, if we said, oh, we're going to be in a build program, well, guess what? In the strip, you had more fertility then at the end of the season versus in between. If you said, well, I'm going to put on half of what I think my crop's going to remove because I think there's a whole bunch in the soil yet, well, we found less fertilizer in the strip than in between. So most people like us, we're putting in the strip what we think the crop's going to use. We're not really on a build program. We're big believers in using broadcast to do a build program if you really wanted to do that. Otherwise, just fertilize for the crop, and then you can fertilize anywhere you want, or you can soil test anywhere you want, and the results should come out about the same.
All right. Get some pest control things. Had a question. I was switching over from no-till to strip-till. Do I need to change anything with my weed control? I expect I'll still be burning down and using residual herbicides.
Yeah, the biggest caution I would have would be just being even a little bit more careful about what herbicide you're going to use and the rate and when you use it, because now you've got a black strip over that seed. So when there's residue there, you safen things. Just as an example, Prowl north of Interstate 80 is not labeled after planting. Now, there are some people that will do it. Again, it's off-label, so you're not supposed to be able to do it, and you shouldn't do it. But when there's all kinds of residue there, you can get by with it much better than if there's no residue there. But no, I mean, we're probably not changing anything real dramatically. I would just treat strip-till very similar to no-till, because you're going to need to burn down. And if you're worried about the herbicide working after you spray, you could put some residual herbicide out either in the fall or real early in the spring. We've done both things. It works fine that way. That way it's activated by the time you're coming along in the spring. If you spray it right after you plant, you have to have a fair amount of rain to get it activated. So it's basically more crop safe, and it's better for weed control if you can get the residual herbicides out earlier. But, you know, it all depends on your situation, your soil type, and what rainfall you can expect after planting.
All right, the last one I hadn't gotten to yet was insects. I had a question. Do you necessarily have to expect more insects? We're switching over from conventional tillage to strip-till. We've got neighbors that have strip-tilled that say you will need to use insecticide each year you plant corn. Is that true?
Well, you're going to have more bugs. Now, are you going to have more rootworms? Probably not a lot, maybe a few, but you're definitely going to have more of some of these secondary pests. So we would expect to see more white grubs, more seed corn maggots, seed corn beetles, cutworms.
Wireworms.
And definitely wireworms, yes. Also stalk borers. So you're going to see more insects just because of the residue that's left there. So something I said earlier in the show about, you know, our grandpas never could no-till. So what they always would do, and just like our dad always did, is they mowboard plowed. They turned it as black as they could. Well, one of the reasons why they did that, because for a lot of us who aren't that old, we kind of forget why they did that. And yes, part of it was the seed bed, but another enormous part was to bury all the diseases, insects, and weeds that they possibly could put down deep in the ground. And that actually was fairly effective. So, yeah, when you're going to minimum till, then you're going to have more bugs. And you're going to have more bugs yet when you go to strip till, and even more insects when you go to no-till.
All right, let's jump out of the strip till then. We've got a question from Marlon in Northwest Iowa. He said, my P and K has been broadcast spread on the surface of the soil. I'm wondering, is it worthwhile to disc it under, considering fuel and equipment cost, or is it better just to leave it on the surface until spring? Wondering what risks there are of just leaving it on the surface.
Your biggest risk is soil erosion. If any of the soil moves because of wind or water, then that fertility is going to move along with it. So yes, it's if you lay those non-mobile nutrients on the soil surface, then it is a good idea to till it in somehow. Otherwise, if you say, well, boy, I want to be in no-till, strip-till, whatever, that's fine. Just you want to inject that fertilizer down in the ground. Okay, if you don't physically take that phosphorus and move it down into the ground, and potassium to some degree, but phosphorus especially, it's going to stay there. And so it's not in the right place. Keep in mind, the majority of roots are down that 4 to 8 inch zone. When you're 4 to 8 inches deep, it's going to take 100 years to get that phosphorus 4 inches deep. It's never going to happen. So we want to get it down there. That's where we have more roots, we have more moisture, and you'll just get much better efficiency out of it. So can you leave it on the soil surface? Sure you can, but the odds are you're going to lose some, and you're not going to get the same kind of return on investment that you would if you incorporated it deep in the ground. Now, I would also say phosphorus basically stays where you put it. So if you wanted to put out 4 years worth of phosphorus and you only want to till once every 4 years, you can do that. You don't have to continue on this, oh, I'm going to fertilize a little bit every year kind of program. If you say, you know what, I'm comfortable, I can live with tilling once every 4 years, well, then put on 4 years worth of phosphorus. It's not that big a deal. It's just that when you do that, you need to also put on 4 years worth of zinc, 4 years worth of copper, 4 years worth of potassium. Just do it all at the same time, and it's not going to hurt anything. What hurts is when you get the ratios out of whack. So if you put on 4 years worth of phosphorus and you don't put any zinc with it, well, of course your yield's going to suffer because your phosphorus to zinc ratio is now out of whack. So, anyway, I would just say, yes, you want to get it down on the ground. That's an absolute.
All right. Thanks for the questions. Appreciate that, Marlon. We got this one from Trent. He said, I was listening to your broadcast from Friday, and I'm wondering, could I get a pull-behind spreader from my local fertilizer dealer, mix sulfur, boron, and possibly copper together, spread it myself, then have the fertilizer dealer carry on as usual with his VRT for the rest of the spread? I'm wondering, will those three nutrients stay mixed, or will they settle apart, or would I have to do them each individually?
Okay, so if you bought them each separately, I seriously doubt that they would all stay together. They most likely aren't going to have the same bulk density. So that's what you're looking for, is the same bulk density. But as I say that, there are products you could buy that would basically have those nutrients all together in a pellet. So talk to your fertilizer supplier. Otherwise, if your fertilizer supplier can't do it, talk to some other fertilizer suppliers in the area, and maybe they can get you some kind of product that would be able to do that. Otherwise, if you could get something that was three compartments. So we bought a cheap used floater last spring, and I'm so glad we did, because we have three compartments in there, and we are doing things like this. It's just, you know, in three separate bins, as opposed to, oh, I'm mixing it all together in one bin.
All right, got a few pieces of feedback here from Robert. It's interesting. Sometimes we'll get an email from somebody and they'll send one question and then they'll immediately send another one. Oh, yeah, I thought of one more thing. Robert had a few things for us. He said we were talking about soybeans getting treated as a scavenger crop, and he said in the South, now he's down in northeast Arkansas, he said in the South, wheat also gets treated as a scavenger crop. Guys don't fertilize very well. And then a couple of soybean comments he had. He said, we have some crusting situations in our sandy loams, but this year, just wanted you guys to know, you always talk about inch and a half or something for soybean planting depth. We planted at 3 to get it down into the moisture, and we actually got a great stand. Hey, thanks, Robert. We appreciate the feedback. Thanks for checking out our program, too. Yeah, you always have to adjust to the year with certain things, but you have to be careful. Like you say, when you had that crusting risk, you can't adjust too far because all of a sudden you get a heavy rain, and there could be problems, too. So you kind of got to play the odds. Thanks for listening to our show today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.